Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
The University Musical Society, located in Ann Arbor, Michigan, has been presenting a full spectrum of performing arts since 1880. Today, the University Musical Society, fondly dubbed UMS, presents 75 performances along with more than 100 educational events each season. From classical music to contemporary dance and theater, UMS is the symbolic creative heartbeat of Ann Arbor. A parallel star in the live performance scene is the Arc. Founded in 1965, it's the go-to place for live performances focused on folk and ethnic music, along with storytelling performances and much more. I'm Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me in Ann Arbor, Michigan, for a visit with Michael Konjoka, the Director of Programming at UMS, and Marion James, the Executive Director at the Arc, where music lives.
I'm Tom Wilmer, and we are here with
Michael Konjoka, Director of Programming at UMS in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
And UMS, for somebody from Wisconsin?
It's an acronym that stands for University Musical Society.
And?
Marianne James, Executive Director of the ARC in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Ann Arbor really is an extraordinary magnet and has been for 150 years for the arts, for music, for culture, for dance, hasn't it?
Absolutely. It's got a great audience and has a history of bringing in wonderful, wonderful performers across all sorts of genres.
Let's start with the Arc.
You're here in the Arc, and it really focuses on 300 nights of the best folk roots and ethnic music that is offered throughout the world, and it's right here on our stage in Ann Arbor.
As we're sitting next to the stage in the venue, what's the number of seating? It's like 200?
Oh, no, it's 400.
But yet there's this intimacy, I'd guess 150, looking out.
That's one of the hallmarks of the Arc and something that both audience members and artists from across the world comment on, the ability to have an intimate, really connected experience between the artist and the audience here in this venue.
Physically, looking at the layout, there's almost a smoke and mirrors because there are no seats that are far from the stage. That's pretty incredible.
Every seat is within 50 feet of the stage. And the front seats, you can put your feet up on the stage.
Unless a performer gets mad at you for kicking over their Fender amp.
No, we're very careful about that, and they love it.
Give us the broad brush about the Arc, its history and what you focus on, and some of the breadth of different performers that come here.
Sure. It started in 1965 as a campus area venue, really as an alternative for students in a very turbulent time, a place where they could come and talk and really work on things, work out issues. It was originally not a music venue exclusively. And over the years, we found that the heart and soul of the Arc came through music. That was the opportunity for people to really connect as community and to really have an experience that broadened their thinking, opened their hearts. So it was started by churches, although it was always secular, and it's always had that heart and soul to it, and I think that's one of the hallmarks of it. So it's been here for 50 years. We're celebrating 50 this year. Pretty remarkable for an organization that really got going as a folk venue ultimately, and now it does all sorts of music.
I love it. Looking in at Ann Arbor, it seems like it's a little essential keystone, a part of the block that makes Ann Arbor what it is.
Without a doubt.
It's one of the landmark institutions in Ann Arbor, and it really is one of the things that defines Ann Arbor. When people think of the art experience in Ann Arbor, they think of a few places, and one of the things they think about is the Arc and who it brings and what it does for audiences and what it does for the community.
I would assume that this has served and does serve as a model for other venues of similar concept that could be started around the country.
Absolutely. We've had people in our cohort who are just starting up contact us for information. Swallow Hill in Denver actually consulted with us a little bit, and we got a phone call from Arlo Guthrie when he was looking to take the church and turn that into a venue. So, you know, he's been a longtime friend, and he knew who to turn to when he was thinking about, how do I make this go? So it's been great.
So I know you must have had him come and perform here.
He is one of our signature artists, and we love Arlo, and we've been with him through his whole career, and he's been with us almost from the beginning.
The train pulls out at Kankakee and rolls along past houses, farms, and fields. Passing trains that have no name, freight yards.
almost as legendary as his dad.
Well, that's true, and that's one of the beauties of the ARC, is that we present artists from the beginning of their careers all the way through to when they're slowing down, touring a little bit less, maybe drawing fewer artists, but that's our commitment. We are committed to artists through the whole span of their career, and I think that that's one of the things that makes the ARC what it is.
You all have been doing this so long with so many musicians consistently, like you said, over the years. There must be a brand, this Ann Arbor brand, that's part of that panache, part of who you are.
Absolutely. Ann Arbor itself, people will often say, obviously they thank the ARC from the stage, they love the ARC, and the ARC has its own feel, but they also love Ann Arbor. We were talking earlier together about the fact that there is a crossover among organizations and among presenters here, so artists are often playing for the ARC at one point, and then they may be playing with UMS, University Musical Society, at another point in their career, then they may come back to the ARC. We saw that with the Carolina Chocolate Drops.
Blowing corn and cotton too, and when the day is over, ride the mule and cut the fool and love begin all over.
And other artists that we sort of, I'll say, share together, and it's wonderful.
You know, I just want to pick up on what Marianne was saying, and, you know, this sort of amorphous and hard to describe Ann Arbor brand, because Ann Arbor is a unique place like no other. And we were talking earlier about the fact that there's this concentration of institutions that are really committed to mission-driven programming, which means, doesn't mean that we don't think about the business and we've got to be viable as a business, but really the bottom line is only one consideration, and our commitment to artists, our commitment to making certain that artistic experiences across the full range of performance are a part of what our community experiences on a daily and weekly and monthly and yearly basis is really one of those things that makes Ann Arbor really special. And when Marianne talks about a commitment to an artist over the course of their career, really what she's talking about is the willingness to early on take risks and incubate and become a partner in supporting an artist mature and, you know, develop their voice in front of a caring, sensitive, knowledgeable audience.
This is literally a total unknown that she's willing to bring in and nurture.
No doubt. You know, in the world of folk, traditional music, roots music, the ARC does that on a daily basis. For UMS, we're doing exactly the same kind of work in the world of classical music, the world of dance, the world of theater. We really think about diverse music, contemporary dance, primarily contemporary theater, as the three legs of our artistic stool. It's fun to see how those three very different worlds of performance can articulate with one another over the course of a season.
Back to incubation, everything is shifting, everything is changing right before our eyes. For example, remember I think it was the Civil Wars, it was YouTube that made them.
Run away by yourself another day. A cold wind's whispering secrets in.
Yeah, the Civil Wars came to the ARC for the first time and, in a rare occurrence, sold out. And it was the YouTube phenomenon and people listening on their own.
Okay, so outside there are those possibilities, but it still seems that the ARC is one of those rare opportunities for an unknown like a Civil Wars to have a venue, to have access.
That's absolutely true. It's hard for artists to find places to play when they're first starting out. And back to Arlo, we talked with him recently about our 50th year. That was one of the things that he talked about, was the ARC's willingness to take a risk on an artist. And also, they can cut their chops in front of an audience that is knowledgeable, supportive. They take risks. Yeah. So even veteran artists will roll out a new song here that they've never played elsewhere because they know Ann Arbor's a great place to do that.
Passionate supporters, but a critical audience nonetheless.
They are so knowledgeable, and we take our audience into Hill Auditorium, which is a beautiful venue on campus where UMS does a lot of presenting as well. And we do an Ann Arbor Folk Festival every year to 3,200 people over two nights, each night, 3,200 people. And if the sound isn't right, we're going to hear about it. They're very discerning, we like to say.
Michael, let's shift gears and talk a little bit about classical music and dance and how you keep that energy going in the new generation, the young kids. How do you, you know, I went to a big concert in San Jose, and I looked out over this beautiful theater, and it was gray hairs, 99%. And I go, oh, my God, you know, what if you had to be under 50 to get in? There'd be about 21 people there.
Well, I'd like to just start by giving you a fact. I'm happy to say that for all of the tickets that we sell over the course of any UMS season, roughly 20 to 22% of them are sold to students and young people. Nice. And Hill Auditorium, because of the architecture of it, it's on three levels. If you're the sort of person that only goes onto the main floor at a classical music concert, it would be easy to leave the hall and imagine that this phenomenon you described, the graying of the audience, is very much happening in Ann Arbor as well. But the actual fact of the matter is it's not. You need to go upstairs because upstairs is full of young people, whether they be university students or the local high school band coming to a concert together. It's really, it's a fact that we're really proud of as an organization that we're able to engage that many young people in what we do.
I was at an Ira Glass performance at the university, Cal Poly, and he asked people in the audience to raise their hand how many journalism students were in the audience, and there were three, to hear Ira Glass. So there are these disconnects, but somehow you guys have found a way to harness and connect and to draw them in. How do you rise above the horizon?
I really want to say something to your point. Putting a season together of great international work and announcing it is just the beginning. Once you put the season together, the work of connecting it, selling it, making it relevant, creating ownership and buy-in amongst the universe of constituents that you have in southeastern Michigan is the critically important piece of it, so that when Ira Glass asks the question and three people raise your hand in Ann Arbor, you're certain that 100 people are going to raise their hand. And I think a lot of people think that it's as simple as just putting the season in front of them and they will come. No, you've really got to work at continually engaging. And
there have to be some specific things you do to plug in and to make it show.
For me, it's very retail. We live in the world of technology and e-connection and e-communication, but I'm a retailer at heart. You still have to see people face to face.
Social media is not enough.
No, social media is a really important
part. But not enough.
It's not enough. We have a group sales manager that just started at UMS, and we both agree that it's still about meeting people, talking about your mission, what it is you're doing, and why it's important in an on-land, live context that really makes the difference.
Can you give me a specific example of that outreach and context?
So this November, we are presenting for the third time probably the most important and famous African musician performing today named Youssou N'Dour. And in preparation for that presentation in November, we had three folks in our office, including Al Hussein Ba, who's the president of the Michigan Senegalese Immigrant Community Coalition. And we were strategizing together on how to make sure that that community that lives in southeastern Michigan feels like they're a central part of that concert by what for them and for a lot of us is royalty coming to Hill Auditorium and really spending the time to ensure that they feel like this is for them and that they're front and center and present during the concert. So it's not about scheduling a season and putting it in a brochure. It's about hand-to-hand connections and reinforcing of your missions and the values that your program represents.
It's implicit. You then have to be really conscious and open eyed when you look out at your community, not be passive and reactive, but the opposite. And so you're constantly being challenged as to who and where and why, how you're going to plug in.
That's what for us becomes part of the creative exercise. You know, it's really fun to stand back and imagine every season, how can we connect a program of artistic experiences creatively to both known and unknown audiences?
Maybe we're both just obsessive or whatever, but I think it's fascinating in that it's one thing to have this creative director, oh my God, look at our poster, or, you know, look at our brochures and everything, all the ducks are in line. But there's this other dimension, this other plane that's so essential, but it's almost this cosmic process of thinking, like he was saying, of reaching out. Who do I reach out? Where do I connect with them? How?
Sure, and the arc is a little bit different because we're doing 300 shows a year in a smaller venue, and we're not booking a season. We're just booking.
Wow.
All out, yeah. All the time.
But so you're constantly reinventing yourself, too.
We are.
Every time.
We are, and one of the things that I think is different about the ARC is that we don't have an audience. So let me say, when we book the Ann Arbor Folk Festival in Hill Auditorium, we want as broad an audience as possible. We're doing what UMS is doing in terms of reaching out, trying to get people. We want people to see that music and fall in love with some of it, at least. But when we book the ARC, we are booking more specifically to certain audiences, and that is more of a if we build it, they will come idea, and especially for emerging artists, because people are in our world are going out to seek that music out themselves, or it's being shared with them through social media, through someone they trust, their taste. Here it's a little bit of a different formula, and we've learned to be comfortable with the fact that we're not trying to convert certain people to come and hear Peggy Seeger, who may not be interested in that. But we hope that when they find their way to other artists, especially young artists who are paying tribute to that kind of music, that they're going to find their way back to Peggy Seeger and other veteran artists. And that happens.
Educational outreach, elementary schools. How often and when do you guys bring the kids in, or do you come to them?
Well, educational outreach and the delivery of educational experiences for K-12 and university-age students is a central part of what we do now on a daily basis. We're constantly thinking about how, one, we can bring students to the venue to have a fully produced artistic experience, which we all know is it's a rarer and rare opportunity for young people these days. We're also equally interested in bringing artists to the classroom or to contexts so that learning can happen as part of curriculum at school as well. It's something that we do. I mean, we deliver at least, you know, 10 to 12 school day performances a year, hundreds of in-classroom experiences for K-12 and also university students. We're now, as far as the university is concerned, producing our own coursework that uses live performance as the text and is taught by faculty people. So we're really continuing this quest to integrate arts and performance into the center of the student experience.
That is your future.
It is, no doubt.
Unfortunately, I think we're out of time. They gave us 10 and we're up to 20.
Excellent.
Funny how that works.
I know. This has just been wonderful. It really has.
I'm Marianne James, Executive Director of the ARC. And for further information about our programming and what we do, visit thearc.org.
I'm Michael Konjoka, Director of Programming at UMS. And please visit us at ums.org for all that we do.
Thank you, guys. What a pleasure. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort Maui at Wailea invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
The Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative was recently awarded the prestigious Phoenix Award by the Society of American Travel Writers. HLRI was one of four recipients of the prestigious award that recognizes international organizations actively involved in conservation, preservation, beautification, and anti-pollution campaigns that further the growth and appeal of travel destinations.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a weekly featured podcast on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. Our San Francisco-based associate producer is Molly Blaisdell, covering the San Francisco Bay Area, the island of Maui, and the South Pacific. Our Wisconsin-based associate producer is Julie Henning, and Lauren Hayes is our technical assistant.